Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars, and you're welcome to join us. Obviously, earlier in the show is easier than later in the show. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And let me see if I can just actually move my levels up just a little bit so I can hear you better. Nevertheless, Gil is the one that's running the show. He's the engineer. He's sitting in the front of the train. I'm kind of sitting in the back of the train enjoying the ride. If anything goes wrong, I want to remind you that it's Gil's fault.
I'm in front of the train?
Yeah. did they hear you say that, Gil?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good, good. Yeah, you are in front of the train when the train crashes, and then you're the hero when the train avoids a direct hit. 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, we've got an equally easy number to do, 888-960-9696. 888-960. That's the name. That's where we're at, 960 on the AM dial. Then 9696. And you can call us from wherever you're at, because we do have people that listen to us from a very far away. A couple of things real quick before we go into the show. I want to tell you that I tease people that have an engineering degree. I tease them because oftentimes we are adverse to one another in the legal arena. So I'm working on a lot of cases right now that involve mechanical. Did the tire fall off before the crash or after the crash and stuff like that? And obviously the engineers oftentimes are on my side, or our side, or the side I'm on, and oftentimes they're on the other side. But over the years, I've had a lot of people from the educational arena say that when you're an engineer, you're just not an engineer of all things human and not, that you have to have some kind of focus, like hydrology or mechanical or metallurgical or biomechanical or whatever, but usually you have to have some kind of focus because they don't really have a degree that just says you know everything in the whole wide world. I tell you that with a smile on my face because many of the people I work with every day are engineers, and we always have this kind of spirited discussion. So I'm going to read you a note that I got. And this is just, it is what it is. Last week, we had a gentleman that called in, and he asked about a car that I'm just not real familiar with, so I referred him to somebody who was. And they ultimately had a talk, but this is the email I got from the shop owner. He says, the guy from the radio is going to drop off his car on today. From our phone conversation, I am fairly certain that he's going to need a fuel distributor. He's as nice as a person can be. His breathing issues are complication from Agent Orange in Vietnam. And when he was on the show, he apologized for his voice. And it wasn't a problem to me, but you sounded like you had a cold. Okay? So anyway, he goes, now here is an anomaly that you're going to have a difficult time believing, Mark. This gentleman's an engineer and wanted to know in detail how the system works. This is one of my favorite things to do, except with engineers, they're usually trying to impress me with how much they know instead of actually listening to the explanation to the question they ask me. This gentleman, this Vietnam veteran, was just the opposite. He asked very intelligent questions and listened intently to my response. I was shocked. To say the least, I'm shocked too. And then he goes on, this is the shop owner, and I have a bone to pick with you. As much as I appreciate all the kind words on the radio show, I think you said I get 9 out of 10 right. That implies I got one wrong. So my ego has to ask you, which one did I miss? And I'm going to tell you exactly the answer I gave him, because I called him on this, and we were both laughing together. You can't, when you're a radio talk show host, and there's no other way to put it, you have to lie. You have to lie, otherwise people aren't going to believe you. This is a good example. The good example is this. I can't say, oh, goody, every time I ask him a question, he tells me the truth. because that's just not palatable. That's just not likely, and that's not the truth. Now, virtually every time I've talked with Goody, him and I have had a discussion, I left better off than I got there. But I said to him, I can't possibly say that you're right every time I call you, because people are going to look at that as a lie. They're going to look at that as I'm trying to blow smoke up their skirt and tell them how great you are. So in reality, I'm always going to default to a step or two down. And so I said, you got 9 out of 10 right. I can't tell you which one the one is, and I don't really care. The fact of the matter is it's just a matter of, I don't know how you would put it. I don't know if it's a matter of, it's just a matter of being on radio and knowing that much of what you say, you're likely to be attacked by, at one time or another, by the left or the right or the north or the south or the east or the west, the non-technicians, the technicians, all that kind of stuff. So I just do my best to walk the center of that roadway, and there are times that I'm likely to exaggerate in a good way, and there's like times I'm going to exaggerate in a bad way. And in this particular case, I just said 9 out of 10, and I don't really care what Goody thinks. It's just the best thing to do. Now,
client privilege.
If that's Goody, he'll have to wait till next hour. And who would that be, Yo?
Actually, it's Ron. He's your first caller.
Okay. Ron, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Morning, Mark. I'm from Mesa, Arizona, but I traveled to San Luis Obispo, California, uh-huh, to visit my daughter. And my wife and I were planning on leaving tomorrow morning. Well, yesterday, when I took the truck, I have a 2015 GMC diesel, three-quarter ton. And on the dash where the speedometer is, it came up that it said service exhaust fluid system. And I'm going to be reduced to 65 miles per hour in 87 miles. And I thought, oh, man, I can't drive 11 hours back to Mesa with that on there. And I called a few of the shops, and nobody's open out here on Saturday. So I was thinking, is there a fix to this? Is this a real problem? If I drove all the way home at 65 on that, would it hurt anything?
No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. What it's saying is you, first of all, you put DEF in a separate tank, yes?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, is the tank full?
Probably not. When I got here a couple of weeks ago, it said it was low, and I had like 400 miles to go.
Okay.
So I put one bottle in. Okay. One of the 2.5 gallons or something.
Okay. Okay. I think you need to go into your owner's manual, or have your wife go into the owner's manual, because us guys really don't know how to read the owner's manual.
But I spent about an hour yesterday, so I'm a little frustrated.
Okay. We use urea, which is your DEF, diesel exhaust fluid, to help light this device that consumes the carbon that's coming out of the tailpipe. If it thinks that you've run out of DEF, then it can take control of your truck and reduce your speed significantly.
Yep.
So you can get on the internet and do a process for regeneration on your 15 Duramax. And
okay,
there may very well be something out there that says, do this, honk the horn, wave a dead chicken around your head, kiss your wife once, that kind of stuff. Then do this and do that. Now, you've already gone from Mesa to California, or you haven't left yet?
No, we are in California now. We want to head back tomorrow morning.
Okay.
But we might be late. If you don't have an answer, I'm hoping you do, but I don't think you will.
Well,
unless I have to take it in.
Okay, well, I don't know if you're looking in the right or wrong direction, but there's going to be something in your manual that talks to this, and I think what it's going to say to you, and I'm going off of memory here, I think it's going to say you need to put some DEF in this. I need to see a couple of key cycles, more than one. So you can't put it in when it's running, drive it home, then start it up once and head home. So we may need to see some key cycles in there. We may need to see some heat up, key cycles and heat cycles. So I would certainly drive it around in California there. I might even get on a freeway and go 30 miles one way and come back 30 miles the other. It needs to see the catalytic converter light. It needs to know that you have DEF in the tank, and it's going to take care of itself. And I think this is a warning that in 87 miles, I'm going to shut you down. And when that happens, your wife's really going to be mad at you, because 65 is a generous mile per hour they're going to give you.
2 minutes.
So I think it's yeah. So I think you look in your owner's manual again. Just look one more time and look for that particular light. Look at dashboard instrument. Look under the section of warning lights and stuff. But I'm pretty sure it's going to tell you, check your DEF first. And then I think, now, have you done a bunch of small driving with no engine heat-ups and cool-downs while you're in California? I mean, just small distances here to there, here to there? Have you been on the freeways?
No, I've been doing small, running my grandkids everywhere, football practices, and just having fun with them, you know.
All right. No, and that's fine. That's why I think you ought to go 30 miles up, 30 miles back. Just go take an hour's drive. And I probably would pull it out of high gear and pull it down one gear and bring the RPMs up to about 2,000 when I'm on the freeway. And that's going to really get everything warm. And then after you turn the key off and turn the key back on, what you're looking for is that light to go away. Has it gone away today, right now?
No, I went out and checked. Okay. It's still there.
All right. I think you ought to run on the freeway. I think you ought to just look at your manual one more time. This is you can overcome this situation. You just have to know the procedure to do that. And, frankly, I don't know the specific procedure, but I think I've given you an outline of what the procedure would be. But good luck one way or the other, Ron. And, by the time you get out of the major cities, there's a good chance that you'll be fine. But if not, there'll also be a good chance to hole up at a Motel 6 for the night and then hit somebody tomorrow morning. Or actually, if that's the case, you probably just ought to stay where you're at and come back on Monday if you're kind of worried about that. Unless you can get the light to go out. If you can get to the light to go out by doing the procedure, I think you'll be fine. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick, let me tell you something about a shop that's on my best car repair shops list. That's Auto Dynamics in Sun City. It's really large. It's very trusted. They've been around a long time, since 1982. Chuck Nide and his son Derek own and operate Automotive Dynamics. Chuck is somewhat retired. Derek has got the reins, and he's a young man I'm very proud of. He's very smart. He's very proactive, and he's a great businessman. And he's not necessarily that way because of his father's no different than my kids are because of me. Nevertheless, they have staff and technicians that's not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill. Therefore, they don't and won't sell you unnecessary parts or repair. It's an unusual situation, but we're all watching to see how this affects everything in his business, and so far he's very happy with doing that. So basically everybody's on a salary. So if you're looking for a great shop in the Sun City area, I'd like to recommend Automotive Dynamics, the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. We'll be back.
Mechanic
21 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars and car repair, 602-508-0960. And hey, Ron, I Googled the following data, and it says, Dash says, quote, 89 miles to, I probably should back up just a little bit and see what the heck it says, but 89 miles to reduce speed, end quote. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that gives you advice about the DEF and the warning system and all that other kind of stuff. And many of them are up to date. So Google Dash says, and then quote, 89 miles to reduce speed, comma, 65 miles an hour, end quote. And boom, you'll have a lot of stuff there that will help you out determine whether you're going to make it home or not. Let me tell you real quick about a shop in Mesa, and it's the only shop in Mesa that I recommend you use, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, since 1970, and many years before that, the Thompson family and Vivian family have been in the car repair business in Mesa. It goes back to 1968 when I remember. So they have ASE-certified technicians. They're really good people. And Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, the south side of the road. Main, Stapley, south side of the road, east side. You have to just meet them, shake their hands to understand why I'm so excited to have them on my best car repair shops list, because they really, truly have your interest in front of their own. Thompson's Auto Repair, Main Street, east of Stapley, south side of the road. David, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Love your program, Greg. Very informative. My daughter's car, sure everybody who calls is always their son or daughter's car.
Mm-hmm.
This is true. Her left turn signal doesn't work. And I ran a multimeter to the connector, and I'm not getting any juice there. So she had kind of a floppy turn signal switch, and I replaced that, and it worked. The turn signal came on, and then the next day she called and said it wasn't working again.
Okay.
Then I read where it could be the hazard switch, because flasher could be in there, so I replaced that with no help. And right now I'm stuck at what to do.
Okay. When you did the multimeter, where did you do your testing?
At the connector.
Okay.
You didn't do it at the socket? The socket where the bulb plugged in, yeah.
Okay, so that's what I want to know. You took the bulb out, and you actually checked right there at the socket.
Yes.
So you put... positive lead to one and negative lead to the other, and you could get it to flash.
I couldn't get any power at all.
Okay. See, I don't agree with your process, because that's just not... obviously, you're in the same position as you were before. What we do is we verify power and ground at the socket, and you should have not only checked the turn signal for that socket, but you should have turned the hazards on at the same time. And that would tell you whether or not you have a good ground and good power. It's also important to know that if you lose a ground, you won't have any power. And that's a real common problem with the socket itself. So when you put the light bulb in, it doesn't have a ground connection. So even though you think you have power, It doesn't have power because there's no ground there. And, of course, we need to light the bulb with the ground and power. So if you want my advice, I would say let's back this train way up. Let's not replace any more parts. Grab that socket, take it, put a pair of regular pliers around the socket, and just kind of squeeze it a little bit where the bulb's a little tighter when you put it in. And then every time she doesn't have a signal, her dash lights will show her that she doesn't have a functioning signal. Have her go into the four ways and see if that makes a difference. If it's a bad socket, it won't. Now, there's another thing. We're going to use that same link from the turn signal switch from the hazards forward. So it's not likely that you're going to have a hazard switch or a turn signal switch at the same time go bad, because one's going to kind of override the other. So it's possible that you can lose a socket or lose a connection and have both of those not flash that, but that's part of the process, because if both hazards and turn signals don't make it happen, then it's going to be at the socket or the bulb. So, and I would probably make sure the key's off, make sure the key's in your pocket, take a little steel wool and clean the inside of the socket up. Look at the two lead buttons on the bottom of the socket, and if they're smashed, then you might want to just cut the two wires or three wires off that socket, because it could have park lights, it could have turn signals, and a filament, a dual filament, and then a ground as well. So I don't know, but that's kind of what I want you to do first. I want to go back to the socket, and you can turn on the turn signal. If it doesn't work, then go ahead, gently take it apart, and then wiggle the bulb and push the bulb 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock in the socket, 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and if it starts working, then Mark's right, the socket's the problem. And most of the time you can fix the socket. Most of the time you can fix it. So do me a favor, Mark at MarkSalem.com, let me know how I did. I'd be interested to see what you found, because if it's not what I think it is, which is the socket, then I'm interested in learning from you. So thank you very much, David. And there is, go ahead, did you have anything else?
No, just thanks for your help. I'll give that a whirl and see what happens.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Folks, it's difficult to know the process, and you have to be experienced in order to do that. And the YouTube University on the Internet is someplace that you should not go. It's okay to go there and look. It's okay to go there and just try a couple of easy things. But it's not okay to go out there, because some guy, some lady, some man... somewhere in the world is telling you how to fix your car, and they're scambling with your money. and I don't think that's a good idea. Now, I want to tell you, I spend a lot of time on the internet with that exact same thing. And I want to tell you that 95% of the time when I'm looking for a specific symptom, I will not find the right answer. 95% of the time. And here's the problem. The person that's helping you, you don't know if they're a baker or a candlestick maker. You don't know what kind of skills they have. But I want to tell you that I'm only as good as the information you give me. It's kind of like giving me directions to your house. If you miss a left turn, I'm never going to get there. And if I ask you a question and you say yes and it's really a no, I'm not going to get there. So when you get on the internet, you run into that same kind of problem.
1 minute.
If one person says yes when it's really a no or says no when it's really a yes, that's going to create a problem. And the idea is that most of the time, a diagnosis is going to be cheaper than one or two guesses off the internet. Rick put a turn signal switch. He didn't say what kind of car it is, and I didn't ask him, and to me it didn't make much difference. But he put a turn signal switch and a hazard switch in it, and I can virtually guarantee you that every shop in this town, 50% of the shops in this town, would have diagnosed that problem for less than he spent on those two parts. But I also can tell you that this kind of a situation, there is a strong possibility that this is going to cost $35 to find it and $1 to fix it. And that happens a lot, especially with electrical issues, bad connections, the ground's corroded, blah, blah, blah. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You got a 100% chance. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're going to get back to the show real quick. But first, let me tell you about Kurt's Auto Repair. He's at Bell Road and I-17. There's been many times that I have sent someone to Kurt's, and in his particular case, gosh darn it, we got this buzzing noise going on here that I don't know where it went. Anyway, when you talk about Kurt's, he's just pulled a rabbit out of his hat more times than you can possibly imagine. It's important to understand. Are we still on the air?
Mark, were you? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark. I'm on the phone.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, and Kurtz is a great guy. He has ASE-certified technicians, and he works on both gas and diesel. I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Paul, good morning. How can I help you this morning?
Hi. I have a question on a 2003 Q45.
It's a 2003 what?
Q45.
Okay, 245.
Infinity.
Okay, all right.
It seems to be really sensitive in trying to complete the circuit to start the engine. Even so much as saying in the manual, if it doesn't make a circuit, jiggle a wheel, which means it's obviously sensitive. Is there any way to bypass the steering column and complete the starting circuit?
Well, we on this show, we talk about symptoms. And so I don't even have any symptoms. I have your diagnosis, and then you're asking me to, you know, to deal with your diagnosis. I'd much rather we start at the beginning of this train. So what I hear you saying is when you go to hit the key, you're going to have three possibilities: no noise, a click only, or a crank. And which one don't you have, or which one do you have?
It doesn't complete the circuit to the solenoid to power up the starter.
Okay. You're making a conclusion there.
Well, I assume.
Okay. Well, that's what we have to get past. So, again, there's only three things that's going to happen when you hit the ignition key. What I hear you saying is there's no click at all.
No.
There's no clicking.
No,
there's no cranking. There's neither one of those two things.
No.
Okay.
The circuit doesn't complete. Sometimes you can turn the fob a couple times and it will. Other than that, try to make sure that the wheels are perfectly in line with the vehicle when you stop.
Okay.
And when you get back in, it'll start up.
Okay, that has nothing to do with the price of cheese at all. Nothing whatsoever, whether the steering wheel is to the left or to the right or whether you've got it pointed towards north, south, east, west. It has nothing to do with it.
I assume it shouldn't, except why would they tell you this is what you do if it doesn't work?
So you want me now to comment on someone who told you this, and we don't know what his credentials are or anything. Paul, let me just go to the go to marksalem.com, print out FAQ 28, and if you want to diagnose it yourself, you can do it right there. FAQ 28, go to marksalem.com, and it'll help you out. It'll walk you through the diagnostic processes, because we're not getting anywhere. We're not talking about, well, you're on channel A and I'm on channel B. And it has nothing, I've never seen a car in the world, and I've been working on cars for 39 years. My shop services 5,000 cars a year. I've never seen anything what you're talking about. Now, I've seen cars that don't click. I see cars that click but don't start or crank. And then I see cars that crank but won't catch. But you talk about the fob and the steering wheel and all that kind of stuff. Doesn't have anything to do with what's going on with you. So we're going in the wrong direction, so I need to move on. Thank you very much, Paul. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, I have a 1979 Chevy pickup, and I'm the original owner of it. Never had AC in it. I'm looking at putting an under-the-dash AC unit in, and there's quite a few different brands out there. I was wondering if you had any experience with those.
Well, it's not the brand that's important. It's the installation of the brand. Now, are you going to do this yourself?
Yes.
Okay. Do these kits come with all the brackets for the compressor, the hoses, the condenser, the evaporator, and the evaporator's in the under the dash unit that you're talking about? Does it come with all of that stuff so it's plug and play kind of?
Yes. It looks like I could actually order it for a 79 Chevy.
Okay, good,
and
good.
And anything needs modification, I'm capable of doing that.
Okay, all right. This, on a 1 to 10 scale, is going to be about an 8 on a 1 to 10 scale, with 10 being really difficult and 1 being pretty easy. So I don't know the answer to your question, and I'm not going to recognize the names of these particular kits that you're going to do, but I can tell you what I would do if I were you. I would find the model number or the part number for the kit. And then I would go and I would Google that with the word reviews after it. I would also Google the places you're buying this from, and I also would Google their name plus the word reviews. I would look at Google reviews, Yelp reviews, and any other reviews that you can think of. I think you'll find there the answer to your question. If I were doing this, I would be interested in what compressor that they're gonna send me, and I think an A6 would be appropriate for your particular year, make, and model of truck. I would also look for the biggest condenser. So ask them what size is the condenser that you're gonna send me, and that's the part that goes in front of the radiator. I would also ask them, do I need an auxiliary electric fan, or does the fan shroud and the clutch fan I have now sufficient? And then I would also ask them if it's an R134 system or if it's an R12 system. That may not make much difference, but I still want to know. And a 134 system is going to need a bigger condenser than a 12 system is. And there's going to be people that tell you that 12 is not available anymore and it's really hard to find, and that's all BS. I mean, I've got a couple thousand ounces of 12, and so does a whole lot of guys that I know. And with our recycling equipment, we're not going through it like we used to. So we're going to suck eight ounces out of your truck, and you take 22, so we're going to put your 8 ounce, well, you take 12. So we're going to put your 8 back in and then add 4 to it. So as you can see, I'm not going to sell you but just half as much as you need, because I'm going to put the old stuff back in. I'm going to clean it and remove the water and the metal first and then give it back to you. So and then also look at the wiring diagram, and the under the dash unit is going to have wires that go through the firewall to the front. There's going to be a low pressure switch, probably have two wires on it. Then there's going to be a compressor feed that's going to fire that compressor up. So make sure that harness has a grommet and stuff like that to go through the firewall, so that when you put it through the firewall, you have all the stuff. But that's the best advice I can give you. And if you want to continue the conversation or if you want to ask another question, I'm happy to help you at mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And if you send me an email, I'm pretty good at getting back. If you leave your phone number, I'll call you from my block cell phone. You'll need to pay attention to that, and we can talk about it. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Harmon, you'll be my first caller. I'm sorry I didn't get to you in this 8-minute segment, but we'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I want to talk to you about S&S Tire real quick. They've been open since 1976. They're on their second generation with respect to who's running it. And the two young men that run it are really good, and I'm very proud of them as much as I would if they were my kids, because they know right from wrong, and that's the most important part of car repair and making sure that you raise your hand when perhaps maybe your technicians taking a different path than you would. Nevertheless, they have three locations in the West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have the most comprehensive line of tires and many different brands of the same size. That way you can say, give me a good, better, best kind of pricing structure for four tires, and then you can make up your decision what you want. Now, in addition to that, they also do all the stuff related to tires, like alignments and suspension work. So if you need a tire from a wheelbarrow to a tractor and everything in between, then S&S Tire is a great place. And if you're in the West Valley, Surprise, Peoria, and Goodyear perhaps would be one of the shops that you would patronize. Let's go to the let's go back to the callers. And Harmon, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Well, I got a couple of different vehicle questions. One is, you know, a couple of weeks ago you were talking about parking brake adjustment by the parking brake. But I was always thought that going up around here that parking brake was just a change in tires. But my truck, I started trying to pump that up, and I haven't got it to move. It goes clear the floor and has never come up any.
Okay.
It's probably locked up.
Well, do you have drum rear brakes or do you have disc?
Yeah.
No, wait. Do you have drum or disc?
Disc.
Okay. All right. So when you apply the parking brake, does it even work at all? So if you put it in drive and you apply the parking brake, does it hold the vehicle or not?
No.
Okay. Well, normally the parking brake cables go to the rotor or to the calipers on a rear disc. And when you use the parking brake, there's kind of a ratcheting device that pushes the piston out and gives you the parking brake. So by applying the parking brake numerous times and assuming that the pistons can work and we can ratchet them out, it takes basically the play away. So it just tightens up how the pads sit on the rotor. So instead of being real far away and we have to move a bunch of fluid for them to contact the pads, we get them really close to the rotor so that we can have a nice firm pedal. So I would probably determine whether or not the cables go to the calipers. And I can tell you that there is a specific process when you change calipers, when you change pads, on how you're supposed to deal with that. Because if you just take the pads off and put new pads on and you sink the caliper backwards, the piston backwards in the caliper, that's not the proper procedure. Sometimes it's as simple as taking the cable off and just grabbing a hold of that arm and just sitting there ratcheting the arm back and forth, left and right, until you can see the piston moving out slowly, because it's kind of a ratcheting device. So I think what I'd do is I'd go to the auto parts store and have them pull a caliper for your vehicle. And then I'd probably read the directions that come with the caliper. You're just going to borrow the box for a minute to read the directions and then tell them you'll get back with them. And I'm pretty sure the directions inside the box will tell you how to adjust the caliper. Now, another thing you got to do is crawl underneath the vehicle and apply the parking brake and see if the cables are even moving. Because if the cables aren't moving, then that's your problem. And you have to get that done first. But if they're moving, it's a good idea to figure out how to ratchet those pistons out just a little bit. But your problem is the parking brake's not working at all, and we got to get that working first. Okay?
Yeah, it's 160,000 miles in with the original pad still on it. And like I said, like you, I grew up here on the other side of town, and flat land, you know, parking brakes just to change tires.
Okay. Now, yeah. If it's a newer model car, the back side of the rotor is called a hat. So the rotor literally looks like a hat, where the brim of my baseball hat is the rotor itself, but it goes over the top of my head. That's called a hat rotor. Sometimes we have a too small pair of shoes in there, and you can usually see them. And those two pairs of shoes actually work the parking brake. So they may need to be adjusted. So the real question is, do you have a hat rotor where you have two small brake shoes in the inside of the back of the rotor, and those are supposed to be attached to your pedal, to your parking brake pedal. So that's kind of, now, if you take it to a shop, I'm going to guess here that they're probably going to look at this, and this might be one of those things that we're going to look at it for $40 or $50, and we're going to go ahead and adjust everything up for another $20. That could very well be it. Obviously, I can't give you direct pricing because I don't know what's wrong with it. I'm just guessing that most of us are going to be in that arena. Okay?
My other question is shop. I'm at the opposite end of South Mountain from you, so it's like you or Larry Harper, or I go to work out there close to S&M.
Okay.
And that's about the choices.
Okay. Well, any one of us can do it. I know Harkers can do it. I would probably call S&S and ask them if they can help you with getting your parking brake on your Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Plymouth, Toyota, whatever, if they can get your parking brake to operate. And because they do alignment and suspension work, and alignment involves rear end, and so I would imagine they could, but just call. I know we can, and I know Harkers can, Bob can. So those are three out of three can probably take care of it.
Yeah. The other question I got, I have an 05 Chrysler 300. I've had trouble. I'm guessing with the air conditioning switch. It's like my air conditioning won't blow on high, but it will blow on and off. And then now the headlight switch is starting to do things. It's a 05, and I know a lot of the plastic's starting to show sun damage because it's lived its entire life outside. Am I looking at not a big deal to fix those few things, or should I be looking at a newer vehicle?
Well, I tell everybody when they're going to bail out of their car because they're faced with a big bill, I don't know if you're going to buy a used car, but you're buying somebody else's problem that may have a problem just like yours is, and you step out of the kettle and into the fire. And if you're going to get rid of the vehicle and go buy a new one, I can do 4 years of maintenance on your car for the tax and license of your new car. So I can fix anything on your car. I could put a motor in it if you buy a new car, because the tax and license will cover a motor. So it's six and one, half a dozen the other. I don't know. On your 300, what I heard you say, because you're kind of garbled, but I heard you say that you have speeds 1, 2, and 3, but you don't have 4. Is that right?
I don't have 4. When it started, it wouldn't blow on high. I clicked it back 1, and it came on high. And then a little later, and there for a while, I was running with one of the mid-speeds, I'm not sure which, on off. And I was afraid to touch it. The other day, I went ahead and moved it, and I got it to blow 1 speed higher, but it worked. But the high position doesn't work at all.
Okay.
Still is on.
Okay. You have an intermittent problem with the blower switch, and the blower switch setting doesn't match the blower's operation. So on speeds 1, 2, and 3, we go through a resistor. On speed 4, we just send 12 volts to the blower motor. It could be the blower motor's acting up. It could be it could be a lot of things, but it's most likely going to be the switch or the resistor or the blower motor. And frankly, none of those are scare the hell out of me. All righty? Okay.
Now the headlights have started doing that intermittent on and off sometimes when I'm driving during the daytime. The headlights come on and they go off. You know, the dash lights go up and down. The headlights are on, and so.
Wait a minute. The dash lights. Wait a minute. The dash lights go on and off.
You know, they go bright and dim. You know, like they go dim when the headlights are on.
Okay, they're supposed to do that though, right?
Yeah, but it's doing it on its own.
Okay.
When the headlights are supposed to be off in the daytime. The headlights are coming on and going off, coming on and going off.
All right, I don't know what that is. Last time I saw that, somebody had bought a brand new dash mat and covered up the sensor on the dash that's supposed to make that happen. So
it does not have the automatic.
Okay, I'm just guessing. All right, it has to have some kind of a sensor to tell it night from day. So I don't know if the sensor's covered up. I don't know if somebody spilled a soda pop on the sensor. I don't even know where the sensor's at. All I'm telling you is you're telling me symptoms, and I'm telling you it's probably related to the sensor that determines when it's day and night. So, I mean, you can go in and replace the headlight switch if that's what you want, or you can do whatever you want to do, but I think what you do is, and that's what's part of the whole process of car repair is discussing. I ask questions and you give me answers. If you give me the wrong answer, or you make a conclusion that said, no, it's not the sensor, then you've made a hard right turn and I'm never going to get to where I need to go. If you, because there's three answers, yes, no, or I don't know. But the communication is so important with car repair. We and really and truly it has, it's not a problem for ladies. They don't come in and tell us how to fix their car. They don't come in and tell us that they don't if skip the symptoms and just tell us what they think it is. The guys do that, but the women never do that. And that's why when a woman walks into a car repair shop, she's worried about getting ripped off because she doesn't know anything. But she doesn't understand that we want to hug her for just giving us the symptoms. And oftentimes it's going to be a lot less money than a guy who comes in with a hairy chest and starts telling us how to fix his cars and he won't give us the symptoms, or he just blows past the symptoms, but he wants us to check the grounds here and he wants us to check the blower motor here and he wants us to check the resistor here and he wants us to check the high speed and he wants us to check all that circuit. We don't even know what we're doing, but yes, sir, we'll do it. At $125 an hour, that's kind of a bad idea. But anyway, Harmon, these are all fixable. I just can't fix them over the air because I just can't fix them over the air. Anyway, 602-508-0960,
602-508-0960.
Let me tell you about another really good shop in the automotive industry, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. He's the only transmission shop in Phoenix that I say you should go to. He's been around since 1968. He's at 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. And Phil's been around since transmissions were first, automatics were first there. He started with the Power Glide. And he's changed and moved perfectly into the electronic computer-controlled transmissions that instead of using fluid and little bitty balls and springs to shift you from first to second, we're actually using electronic solenoids that open and closed at a certain time to give you first, second, third, fourth, fifth, overdrive and lockup. So Phil has all that down, and he can build your transmission if you need to, if that's what you need, to your OEM specifications or more than that. But he says that many times when people come in and think that they're going to need a transmission, it really isn't going to necessitate a complete rebuild. And he does leaks, and he does services, and he does all this kind of transmission stuff. Even if the flywheel or the flex plate's broken on your car, Phil can take care of that. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE at 40th Street in Washington. We're going to come back in just a few minutes with another hour. You're welcome to load the line, 602-508-0960. And if you'll just give me the year, make, and model of your car, maybe the mileage, and then tell me what the symptoms are, we can start off on a good foot. Or you can tell me about a circumstance that you want me to comment on, as long as you don't use anybody's names and tell me, you know, what the situation is or what the problem is and ask me, you know, what do I think of it or something like that. I can usually do that. And anyway, that the easy way to do that is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem, and we'll be back in about 6 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're going to be here talking about your car. And if you'll just start the conversation with year, make, and model, and the mileage, then we'll talk about symptoms, and I'll ask you questions. And when you answer the questions, there's three answers, yes, no, or I don't know, and we'll do the very best we can to make sure that I send you in the right direction, because that's the way car repair works. Larry Harker's Auto Repair, we just talked about them a few minutes ago, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob, the owner, and his wife Ellen, she handles the front counter. She's the one that's going to write your repair order up. Bob handles the shop. He's probably one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met. He's the kind of guy that you can say to him, I've had it to five shops and nobody can fix it. And that's kind of like waving that red cape in front of a bull. He's not going to fix your car for free. He's not going to fix your car unless you tell him to, but there's three parts of it. It's the diagnostic process and then the repair process. Those you pay for. And the third one, it's verification that what I did fixed the problem, and that's on the house. So if you have a problem from an oil change to a water leak and you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, I'm proud to recommend Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Bob, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2005 Cadillac DeVille 130,000 miles on it, and my service engine light comes on. It'll stay on for a half a day, and then it might go off for a day or two and go back on. Keeps going on and off.
Okay. That typically means that the problem is intermittent, but there's going to be a crumb travel in the computer. So we're going to plug into that plug underneath the left side of your dash, and we're going to say, hey, what's going on? And it's going to say 127, and it's a code. And so we're going to look at the code, and the code's going to say intermittent TPS. That means an intermittent throttle position sensor. Or it'll say engine misfire, cylinder 6.
I had an oil change, and I took it back to him because that light came on. And he said, well, it shows lean, but you have to bring the car back someday and leave it. But it shows lean, he said.
Okay.
Apparently plugged into that.
Okay, and that gives me some help. Let me explain. The computer needs to know what comes out of the tailpipe because it knows, just like a horse, what comes out of the tailpipe has everything to do with what goes in the front. And so in your car, we use oxygen sensors to look at the exhaust. Now, the oxygen sensors want to vacillate back and forth. They want the center line, they go left of center, right of center, left of center, and sometimes 500 times a second. So the computer's saying, intermittently, I see something I don't like, and I'm guessing here now because there's a lot of sensors. The O2 sensors I'm looking at are saying lean. Now, I don't want you to go out and buy a bunch of O2 sensors because that's a bad idea. A plugged fuel filter can cause this, and I'm not telling you to go get a fuel filter either. There is a diagnostic process. The very first thing we want to do is I want you to think that the oxygen sensors only can talk in this language. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's it. 1 through 3, 4, 5. 1 is lean and 5 is rich. 1 is I don't have enough fuel, and 5 is my God, it's raining fuel. So as we go in to do our job, we're going to go to and look at the oxygen sensors on our handheld $10,000 devices. We're going to watch what we call serial stream data. We're going to actually watch them work. Now, I'm working on your DeVille. And the first thing I want to do is are you awake? And so I'm going to cause a lean condition by pulling a vacuum line. And I want to see the oxygen sensor start screaming 1. And he better start screaming 1. So then I'm going to plug the line in. He screams 1. And then I'm going to get some propane, and I'm going to feed it into the air intake, and I better see 5. And let's say that it doesn't go to 5. So then I'm going to pull the vacuum line off the fuel pressure regulator, which causes a whole bunch of fuel to go into that motor, and the O2 sensor says 1, 1, 1. Well, I want to see a 5. So I know that O2 sensor can't talk to me. I know that O2 sensor is incapable of operating within the range it needs to. So I'm going to check the other O2 sensors to see if they can talk in the range that I want them to, and they do. So at that particular point, I'm going to condemn 1 of maybe 4 of your oxygen sensors. On the other hand, a lean condition can be a bad PCV valve. It can be a bad brake booster. It can be a plugged fuel filter. So we have to go in, and we can't condemn the O2 sensor unless we know it can't see both ends of the roadway, both sides of the road. And if it can see a rich condition and a lean condition, then we have to go in and find out what could cause that. So if we see it, we make it work, but yet in the environment of driving down the road, it won't come off of 1. Usually it's a fuel filter or a vacuum leak. So all we have to do is track that down. So you're going to spend $75 to $110 worth of diagnostic fee, plus in the best of conditions, we're going to fix a vacuum leak that costs you $5, and in the worst condition, we're going to have to replace an O2 sensor.
I see. Okay. Can I ask you one more question on my wife's car then?
Sure you can.
I've got a 2007 Buick Lucerne. It's got 100,000 miles on it. And we had it diagnosed, and they said it's a transmission. But what happens when you take off, it jerks. Like there's a knuckle wear or something, I don't know what. But we had the transmission overhauled, and it still does a little bit. We even had some engine blocks, or what do you call them, engine mounts?
Yes.
Replaced. And it's still doing it, If you take off real easy, it doesn't do it. If you take off just any way hard at all, there's a jerk. There's okay. a clunk. Like something's worn. I don't know.
Okay. I feel bad for you because you had the transmission replaced because they said that this symptom causes the is guaranteed that the transmission's bad. And obviously today you and I both know that's not true, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why you pay with a credit card, and that's why you get them to write down the symptoms on the work order, and that's why you tell them as soon as you know that the symptoms are still there. And if they get kind of crappy with you, then you just stop payment on your credit card and then go get the car fixed. And now you've got their repair bill that didn't fix it. And then you got this other repair bill that did fix it. And when your credit card company calls, you tell them that. And the credit card company tells the shop, we're going to back charge you. Then there's a dispute resolution process. But I can't tell you what that is, but I want you to do this for me. I want you to shift it manually. So I want you to pull it into low, and then I want you to accelerate in, and then click. Move the shifter up one. But better yet, what part of town do you live in?
Ahwatukee. Okay. Right on the other side of I-10, though.
Okay.
I'm real close to your shop.
Okay, well, I'll go drive it for you for free.
Okay.
Okay, I want you to go by the shop. I call first, if you would, please. And talk to my daughter, Andy, A-N-D-I.
Yeah.
And tell her your dad said that you would have the gray-haired guy take a ride with me in my car, and I promise I won't have him for more than 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay.
You have to promise that you're not going to take him to Casa Grande. you have to, and you're under no obligation. I'm going to give you a free diagnosis. Now, I feel pretty confident. I've got 3 or 4 senior guys there with gray hair that they're going to know. And here's the real question. Is this a transmission problem? Is this a mount problem? Is this an engine miss problem? There's so many different things that can make it look like a transmission. I'll bet you this, though. I'll bet you dollars to donuts, a dollar for a donut, that it's not even transmission related. I'll bet you it's not even transmission related. Do you have any check engine lights on by chance?
No.
Okay. All right, so we just got to fit. And what he's going to do is he wants you to drive and show him what to do to make it happen. Then he wants to drive and you move over. And so that's what's going to happen. But you just talk to Andy. And please, Monday mornings and Friday afternoons, for obvious reasons, are not a good time to pull this off.
Okay,
And the reason I'm offering it to you is because you're right across the freeway. You don't have to drive far, and I'm your best choice close by. If you lived in North Phoenix, I would send you to other shops. So I just want to make that clear to everybody. This isn't a self-serving deal. It's just because you live in Ahwatukee.
Okay, fine.
All right. Thank you,
Bob. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Okay.
All righty. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I want to talk to you about Action Auto Repair. He's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a good guy. Tom, and I've known him since the late 70s, early 80s. He's a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop, and he serves Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. His staff is well-known for quality workmanship and great diagnostic capabilities, excellent customer service, and he really works hard on your car to give you a fast turnaround time. So it's not like some shops that may decide to work on it and then order parts and then have the technician go to another car, and then come back when the parts have been here for 2 days, but he's either got 2 other cars. Tom doesn't do that. A fast turnaround time is important to him. So I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner, Action Auto. And that's a great place to go if you live in that area. And if you want to try them, I'm not suggesting you walk in there and, have something major done. Go in for an oil change. Go in for a tire rotation. Ask him to check your brakes during the tire rotation. See how they treat you. See what they say. Obviously, you want somebody to come back and say, you don't need brakes. That's all there is to it. You just don't need brakes. And then you say, well, how much more time do I have? And they say, they're 2/3 worn, so you're going to need them in the next 10,000 miles, I'm thinking. Or, sir, you got 75% of the pads left, so you've only used 25%. Those are the kinds of discussions that you really want to have with the shop. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil's going to answer the phone. He's going to take your name, and if you want to use your wife's, that's okay too. And then he's going to put you in queue, and we're going to take your call as quickly as we can. 602-508-0960. If you have somebody a young man or woman that's really a diesel fanatic, Southwest Diesel is looking for someone, and they want to train you to become a diesel common rail technician. The job's going to be an entry level, but it can be male or female. Like I said, it would require some computer skills and the capability to read a micrometer, a dial indicator, and to work 40 hours a week, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. These people will process it in the remanufacturing of injectors. So you clean them, you inspect them, you reassemble them, you calibrate them, and then you verify that what was is now gone. So they're looking for another part-time person for the disassembly and cleaning. So Southwest Diesel, he's on 1800 North 27th Avenue. You talk to David Lopez. So if you're one of those young high school people that perhaps are in college and you can work Monday through Friday, then, and if you like the smell of diesel fuel, I want to suggest this is a great place to go. Southwest Diesel, talk to David Lopez. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars and car repair, and we've got callers on the line, so real quick, let me just do this. Let me do some business, and then we're going to get right to the phone. Strictly Diesel in Phoenix is just exactly what their name says, Strictly Diesel. They are die-hard diesel guys that service, repair, and sell parts. They do both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. Light diesel trucks typically means something in the idea of a 3/4 to 1 ton truck. They don't do big semis and stuff like that. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and their parts department is open 24 hours a day on their website. And Nate owns Strictly Diesel, and he's probably one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He's about 10 feet tall, and his hands look like tennis rackets, so when he shakes your hand, you'll know you're shaking Nate's hand. But he's exactly the kind of guy that you want to marry your daughter. That's Strictly Diesel and Repair. Although he's married, he's that kind of a guy. Let's go to the phones. Felix, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I've got a 2018 4Runner, and I'm looking for a set of running boards for this thing. And I'm wondering if you might have a favorite place down in the valley somewhere that would be a good place to go and buy a set of these versus going to the dealer, which I assume charges top dollar.
Well, I think what you need to do first is just get on the internet and find out if they even make running boards for your 4Runner. And then
yeah, I've done that. They do. Yeah. So
okay. How many different brands do they make?
Oh, I don't know. There's like 3 or 4 I saw.
Okay, then you have to get a hold of the manufacturers and ask them if they have a trusted installer in the area where you want to do business with. And you really want the manufacturer to suggest an installer because they'll have power over the installer. And obviously, if they do a bad job, then the manufacturer could and probably will step up in your place. So I don't have a favorite brand. Are you looking for ones that retract, or are you looking for permanent mounted, no move?
Permanent mounted, no move.
Okay. Well, that should be kind of easy. There'll be plenty of aftermarket ones. Then you have to decide color-coded, black, chrome. Do you want them for all four doors? Do you want them just for the front? Do you want them from front wheel well to rear wheel well? That kind of stuff, and they're all going to mount to the frame, and it's probably going to be in existing bolt holes, so it's just a plug-and-play kind of thing. So that's where I'd go if I were you, okay?
Good deal. Thanks a lot, Mark.
All righty, you betcha. Scott, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking the call. My wife's got a Mercedes 1999 SLK compressor, and to be real brief with the show, I'll be fast with the time. The car, unfortunately, had to sit for about 6 months while she had a health issue, and unfortunately, the wiring harness was eaten through by a bunch of rats, you know, the desert mice and stuff. Long story short, I just wanted your advice. Do you think it's worth it to try to buy a new wiring harness, which runs about $6,500 to $7,000, from what I understand, to try to fix that thing? And fix it up to sell it, or do you think it's not worth the time, or the upkeep, or I should just sell it or donate it for a tax write-off?
I think somebody has to look at it, because I can't answer that question on a domestic car or a foreign car.
Sure.
And just recently we've had a slew of rat chomping. And as a matter of fact, the other day I got my Bobcat up at the ranch, and the bucket wouldn't move up and down, so I took the cover off, and two of the solenoid wires had been chewed in half, and the solenoids were like $300, but I was able to just patch the wires, and everything's worked fine. Now, he ate me again about a month later, so this time I fixed the wires, and I took hot chili pepper, and I just dumped it all over that area. Then I put the cover back on it, and I've beaten that little son of a gun, and he hasn't been back. And I don't think he likes the area that I just, and I used a whole bottle of chili powder. So anyway, that needs to happen. I'm quite sure for $6,500 we can fix the harness. I'm quite sure of that. If you want to talk to somebody who knows Mercedes-Benz, compared to him, I am a first grader where he has a doctorate degree in Mercedes-Benz. Call Goody in North Scottsdale and talk to Goody.
Oh, my God, I know who he is.
He just recently got out of jail. So I've been his friend for a long, and I'm just teasing you. I'm just teasing you. You know I'm kidding. But Goody would be the guy. You need to talk to Goody because he'll be able to help you answer your questions. And
a good friend of mine who's friends with the Charos knows him. So
yes.
Yeah, that's so funny. Small world, my friend. So thanks, Mark. I appreciate the kind advice on that.
You betcha. Thank you very much. And Goody up in Mercedes, he does Mercedes only. He's up in North Scottsdale. He's not on my list because he says I only do Mercedes, and he says I'm busy enough, so the last thing I need is more customers. But he still takes everybody in, and he's been around a really long time, and he's probably one of the most impressive shop owners that I've met in the last 10 years with respect to just wearing one hat like the rest of us. We wear multiple hats, you know, on the domestic side as well as the import side. He's really good. And if you have any kind of a Mercedes, no matter whether it's a new one or the old one, it'll be Goody. We'll handle what you've got. Michael, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
First of all, I want to appreciate all the advice you've given me over the years. We've got another one.
Thank you.
Got a 04 Honda Pilot. I bought it new. It's got 325,000 on it. Problem with electric window, the driver's side window won't go down, stuck up.
Okay. That's kind of an easy one because all we're going to do is reverse the polarity to the window. So can I assume that when you go up you see movement, but when you go down you don't?
No, it doesn't move at all. No power to the motor. No sound.
Okay. The most used switch in the whole car. After now, 325,000 miles, you've been around the girth of the earth 12 times. You've driven the equator 12 times. So the switch has got its, you know, use in it. And most times, we're going to end up replacing the master switch. But but that doesn't mean that's it. We really need to pull the door panel off, and we need to go ahead and two things. I want to just clip the harness to the motor, and I'm going to add a ground and power myself. I'm just going to flip. I'm going to flip the power and ground and see if the motor's working. If it doesn't work, then I'm going to hit it with a hammer. And if it works after that, then the brushes are bad, and I'm going to sell you a motor. Then I'm going to take the cut wire harness I have and go back up to the switch, turn the car on, and I'm going to see if the switch is flopping the power and ground. And if the switch is sending power and ground, but the motor's not doing anything, then the motor's bad. So there's some diagnostic process associated with this, but I'm quite sure it's going to be one of three things. It's going to be a bad motor, it's going to be a bad master switch, or it's going to be a bad connection. But you got to get the door panel off in order to affect that repair. Do you have a shop that you trust to do that?
Well, I was looking, my daughter drives it, so it's downtown Phoenix, McDowell and Central. Anybody down there?
You know, I don't have anybody that close. I've got 25th Street and Indian School. Billy Conan, he could do that. 25th Street Auto. I know Dave Martin at 16th and Osborne. I know Dave Martin could do that at 16th and Osborne. Let me think.
Okay.
Kelly Clark, 12th and Glendale, a little far north. But Kelly Clark at 12th and Glendale, he could do that. Those three guys kind of handle the downtown area for me.
1 minute.
Okay.
All righty.
Yeah, I worked on it yesterday, put a new regulator and motor in it, and that didn't do it. So I'm ready to turn it over to an expert.
Okay, now wait a minute, though. You got two wires to the motor. Do you have a 12-volt test light, the ice pick with the light in it?
Well, yes, that was my approach, but there's so many wires in that thing, you know, with the auto up and auto down.
I know, but I want you to go to the motor. You only had two wires going into the motor, didn't you?
Well, I'm not sure.
Okay.
It was beyond my capabilities.
Okay. All right. I Yeah, and that's okay. If you already got the door panel off, then just leave it off, and then that'll cut your bill just a little bit because they're not going to have to go pull the door panel off. But and you can say, just I'm going to put it in the back seat, and you do your work, and I'll put the door panel back on. But what you need is a little diagnostics, and like I said, it's pretty easy to just grab those two wires and either feed downstream power and ground, or go out or take your test volt, test light, or your digital voltmeter and check the upstream connection. Another thing you can do is manhandle the switch. Push it kind of hard to the front. Wiggle it when you hold it to the front. Squiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Hit it. Don't break it. But sometimes you can actually get the switch to work if you just kind of manhandle it and don't just push it, you know, like you normally would. Just sometimes I tell people to get a little, you know, quarter-inch dowel, wooden dowel, and just kind of put it on top and push down real hard and push on the front and the back of the switch and see if that makes any difference. Because if it does, then we already know it's the master switch. But don't go by the master switch. Have somebody diagnose it for you. All righty. Thank you, Michael. Thank you very much. We'll be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Okay, now's the time for storytelling. And a friend of mine had gone to look at a car. He had been looking for a specific car, and he saw one in the newspaper. So he dresses up and goes to the car place. And when he walks in, they greet him, and they said, you know, what can I do for you? And he goes, I'm looking at this car, blah, 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 blah. And the kid goes, did you just call? Now, I'm giving you from his perspective, okay? I'm not embellishing this. Did you just call? And he goes, no, I didn't. And he says, oh, he says, we got people calling on that car like you can't believe. He says, I don't know that you can see it. They could probably have a lot of people in front of you. Let me go check. So he comes back, and he goes, hey, I can get you in. Come on into my office. So he sits down, and they start talking about this. Now, the friend of mine calls me, and he says, you know, can you help me on the pricing on this? And I said, well, just give me as much information as you can, and I'll just run a quick blue book on it and see what kind of thing we got here. Well, anyway, the top-end blue book, I mean, you know, a private party sale, you know, or a little bit more than a private party sale, what you're going to buy for it at a car buying place was about $5,500 to $6,000, and they wanted 11. And so I told him that. Meanwhile, the guy keeps answering the phone and goes, I'm with somebody. Those people have to stand in line. I'm with somebody. And that just happens over and over and over again. So then I say to him, when he tells me that I think you're being scammed. And you're a long way away from $5,500 to $6,000 on this $11,000 want for this car. He said, okay. So then later we have a conversation, and I find out that he ends up buying it for like $7,500. And he's pretty happy with it. But I say to him, because he's a good friend of mine, I say to him, let me ask you a question. This guy's telling you that there's people lined up across the parking lot waiting their turns to buy this car. And he just gave you an almost $4,000 discount to sell you the car. Does that make sense? If there were people calling on this car right and left and people walking in wanting to look at the car, I think most of us would understand that we're going to stick pretty firm on our price. Anyway, he ended up buying for $7,500, and then there was some tremendous fees associated with that, and he's happy. And his son's happy, and that's okay with me. But when you get in that kind of an environment, that's something that the car guys used to do in the 70s. And when you're in that kind of environment and that happens to you, you need to get the hell out of there. Something's wrong. So don't be taken by car repair people. And especially if you walk in and say, this is the first car I ever kissed a girl in, and I really want to buy this car, you just talked yourself out of a good deal. You can't be emotional about this kind of thing. So if you're going to buy a used car, you just basically say, well, I just want to see what it is. Can I drive it? And what's your bottom line? And negotiate it. But negotiate towards a number that's out the door. Because not too long ago, and I got stung by this. I got stung by this by a friend of mine. I bought a motorcycle, a quad, And he says, this is how much it is. And so I'm thinking that plus sales tax. It wasn't. It was a motorcycle, get ready, freight, a battery charger connection that was two-wire connection for $35. And then there was a dock fee of $750. And by the time I got out of there, I was really mad at Mark because Mark should have done a better job about the out-the-door price.
1 minute.
There was $400 worth of BS charges after the motorcycle. And it doesn't cost $800, $750, $800 to write into the computer that this is being bought by Mark Salem, who lives here, and this is what it is, and he's going to pay with a check or a credit card. It doesn't cost $800. So be careful about those add-ons. The desert protection package, the window tinting, the extra trailer hitch. Don't buy something that you have to pay for them deciding to put window tint on it because you don't want it or you do want it, but your brother-in-law doesn't. Those are the kinds of things that you should be paying attention to. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about a bad high-pressure diesel pump on a piece of construction equipment. And I took it in to have it repaired because I didn't want to transport it to Phoenix. And I got it back with a problem it didn't have before. And actually, this has a pretty good ending. So stick around for that. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about car repair. And I'm telling you some stories that have a moral to them. And hopefully they'll save you some money someday or help you deal with a particular problem. So here's the story. I have a piece of equipment up at the ranch that weighs about four times your car. So it's not something I can move easy. We have a big truck and a trailer that we do move it up and down the valley. But in this particular case, I had a hard cold start problem. So I took it to a local dealer shop and a diesel shop, and there's a young man that owns it. And I really like him. He's just a really good guy, and he knows 10 times more than I do, but he knows from big trucks all the way to two or three or four cylinder small diesels. I mean, he has the fundamental knowledge that's much wider. I'm in a passenger car, light truck kind of arena, and he's in the big trucks, the school buses, the cement mixers, all that stuff. So anyway, I drop it off. And he calls me back and he goes, it needs at least one glow plug. And I said, well, if you're going to do one, I want you to do all four. He said, okay, I'll take care of that. And he says, and also it needs a new glow plug indicator. And I said, go ahead and put that on. So he did. So I went down and he came in underneath his estimates, wrote him a check. I think I paid with a credit card. And I went out and I started it up. It started right up. But I went to drive over this curb to get it home because I live about a mile away and I'm just going to drive it home. And it won't climb over the curb. And it clearly has a loss of power. So I try the curb two or three times and it just won't do it. So I back off and I shut it off and I went and got him. And I said, you know, I got a problem. So he says, well, let's go out and look at it. And we determine with a temperature gun that we have number two cylinders not firing. So he looks at me and he goes, this could be bad. And I said, I understand that. I said, but, you know, let's just figure out what it is and then we'll deal with it. And I says, you know, this could be something unrelated to your work. And he goes, oh, I don't know. He says, you know, together we discuss it. It could be a bad piston. It could be a bad set of rings. It could be a bad injector. It could be a lot of things. And I said, that's okay. I said, I'm going to leave it with you. I want you to diagnose it and call me. So he calls me up and he says, I pulled the injector on number two, and it seems to be firing just fine. But he said, it's number two, and I ran a compression test on it, and the compression test was 300 pounds plus. And I did all of them at the same time. So we don't have a mechanical issue. It's not a piston or any rings or anything. He says, it looks like it's just the injector. And I said, okay. I said, with your permission, because I know the make, model, and year of it, and I know you're really busy, can I just go get the injectors? He says, yeah. So I went and got four injectors and all the big copper washers that you need to put it all back together. And he put it back together, and he calls me, and he goes, that isn't it. Now, I'm not mad because this thing has 2,800 hours on it. It's a 1996 piece of construction equipment. It's never had any work to the motor. So I'm not real mad. So I said, okay, well, what do we do now? And he says, I think I'm going to swap some injectors. And I said, I think we should have done that when you had the injectors out. I said, if you move the injector number two to number three and number three to number two, and then the cylinder came back alive, then you'd know you had a bad injector. And he says, I know that. He says, I made a mistake. So he calls me back and he goes, you're not going to believe this. The pump is bad. The pump's job, the high-pressure pump in a diesel, is to take the fluid, the diesel fuel, and compress it to thousands and thousands of pounds of pressure. And he says, your pump is not providing any pressure to that number two injector. So he says, I know it's the pump. I'm 100% sure. I said, okay, what, so what's plans B? And he says, I'd like to take it off and send it to Southwest Diesel, which is somebody I know and I respect. And I said, that's fine. Let's do that. So I went inside the office, and his mom was in there, and I said, Mike's going to be writing a new work order. And I says, make sure that he actually, and we're back to that same problem, aren't we, Gil?
Every now and then.
Okay. I'm going to give me just about 4 seconds, and I'm going to switch to the other side. Hold on. Okay. How am I doing there?
You sound good.
Okay. All righty. So now we know it's not the headphones. Anyway, so I said to his mother, write another work order on there because we don't know whose fault this is until we fix it. So I don't know if it's his. I don't know if it's mine. But I know he's probably going to no charge this whole thing, and I'm not going to stand for that. So we send the pump out. We put the pump back on. It starts up. He calls me. He says, come and drive it. And I said, okay. It's got more power than it ever had before. And I said, okay. So I said, I want to pay for the pump, and I want to pay for your labor. And I want to pay for everything because clearly you didn't cause this problem. Clearly that injector decided to go to injector heaven while you had the vehicle, but it had nothing to do with that. I know that if I were to pay you $100,000 to make number three injector go bad, you couldn't do that. And I said, and I know enough about diesel injection pumps to know that you couldn't have caused just the number two injector not to have the right pressure. So we sent the pump out. David calls me from Southwest Diesel, and he says, number two is really bad. He says, I'm going to rebuild the whole pump and blah, blah, blah. And so he puts it back on. So we're, now I know there's a fight coming because the young man feels like that, you know, I'm going to say that it's your fault and I want you to pay the whole bill. And he's probably just going to take the high road and say, you know, Mr. Salem, I'll just pay for everything because it happened on my watch. So I didn't let him do that. So we negotiated a deal where I paid the $644 to pay for the pump, and he would just take the pump off and put it back on. But he got paid for the injectors. He got paid for the glow plugs, which fixed other problems and made me feel better. So I'm the kind of customer that most shops would like to have because I understand that. And I'm telling you that story because the most important part of that story is this. We don't know whose fault it is until we know what it is. So everybody else would look at that like, hey, it happened on his watch. He needs to pay for that repair. But it isn't. It had nothing to do with him. It had to do with wear and tear. It had to do with it just the headlight burned out when he had the car. That's all there is to it. So most of us, if the headlight burns out while we have the car, we'll put it in there. It's no big deal. But when you're talking about a $2,000 bill, that ain't going to happen. And especially if all we did is an oil change and the headlight burned out. So that's just some information to help you. But the most important question there is we don't know what whose fault it is until we know what it is. So we have to diagnose it, and then that'll tell everybody whether it's related. Now, if it would have been some problem with the electrical system, or if there was a problem with compression and he really didn't get a good compression test, that's a different story, but that's not what happened. So the last story is oil. It's really important to understand that there's three kinds of oil today. There's conventional oil, which is what we've had since day one. We have a blended oil, or also called a semi-synthetic, and it's a oil that's blended between conventional, which is what we had all along, and synthetic, which is the new premium, best of the best oil. So the only thing with semi-synthetic or blends is we don't know if it's a 90% conventional and 10% synthetic, or if it's a 50-50, because they won't tell you. Why is this important to you? It's important to you because the oil you use, those three oils, the only difference, they're different in quality, but the real difference is the oil change interval. So if you're going to use conventional oil, you should change your oil between 5 and 7,500 miles. Actually, 3 to 5,000. I'm going to back up. 3 to 5,000 miles. So conventional oil needs to be replaced every 3 to 5,000. Now, if you live in Ahwatukee and you drive 4,000 miles a year, then just do one oil change in April or May, and you can go all year long. No problem. You don't have to buy that real expensive oil. Just change your oil once a year and don't drive more than 5,000 miles and you're home free. A blended oil, which is the middle of the road, the blended, the semi-synthetic, that's good from 5 to 7,500. Same thing. You need to change your oil somewhere between 5 and 7,500. And most people will take the top end. Now, some people drive 15,000 miles a year, so that's two oil changes a year. And I tell them, let's do it in May and let's do it in November. So we start the summer and the winter with fresh oil. And we get to see you twice a year to look your car over, air up your tires, check your fluids, belts, and hoses. Now, synthetic is for the people that drive lots of miles a year. Synthetic starts at about 8,000 miles and goes to 12,000 miles, and according to Mobile One, it'll go 20, but that's a bad idea. If you look at the asterisk there, it means a whole lot. That little asterisk says a lot. It says, or 1 year. So it says, oh, we can go 20 or 1 year. So with a synthetic oil, obviously you're going to pay more than $100 for an oil change, where a conventional is going to be $30 or $40. So there's a big difference in price. But a synthetic will go 12,000. On my trucks, I go 12,000. They're diesels, and I use a full synthetic. And so I'm not having any heartburn with that. And if you drive 15,000 miles a year and you're going to use a synthetic, then really you need one oil change every 8 months, maybe every 10 months. And that's a good idea, too. So it has everything to do with oil change interval, quality of the oil, and the price. So you ask yourself, when I'm working, how many miles a year do I drive? And what's best for me? Now, your engine doesn't have a brain. It has a computer, but it doesn't have a brain. It doesn't love you. Your engine doesn't love you. Your engine doesn't hate you. So a lot of folks and a lot of the old-time guys believe that you can't mix it. Once you start with synthetic, you have to stick with synthetics. And synthetic is too thin. And synthetic is this and synthetic is that. None of that's true. Here's the difference. Conventional, and it's just parameters of coverage, parameters of protection. Synthetic oil turns to a tar at 500 degrees. It's called oxidation. So it goes from a liquid to a solid at 500 degrees. So you think, that's kind of cool. The problem is your car engine is toast at 300 degrees. So no one really cares that the oil turns to a tar at 500 degrees, because when the temperature of your engine gets close to 300, it's just like a burnt piece of toast. It'll never see another mile. So on the other side, the cold side, a conventional oil pours out of the can at about 15 below zero, where a synthetic pours out of the can at 60 below zero. Can you see the difference? So they have parameters that are different. So your engine doesn't know if you put synthetic or conventional in it, doesn't know any of that, and it doesn't care. And you can go back and forth if that's what you want to do. If you want to do a conventional oil for 3,000 miles and then do a synthetic for 10,000 miles, I don't care. No one else cares. The issue is that each one of the oils has different capabilities. Last but not least, detergent. There's lots of talk about detergent in your engine oil. The detergent is not scrubbing bubbles. I promise you that. You're not going to have a dirty engine and put a detergent inside and it's going to clean it up spotless. That won't happen. I promise you that. Detergent is this. When you have a jar of vegetable oil and you put a grain of sand in the top of the vegetable oil, you'll see that the grain of sand will probably fall so far and then just kind of stop there. It's holding that piece in suspension. A non-detergent oil lets all the trash go straight to the bottom of the oil pan. It doesn't hold any solids in suspension. On a detergent oil, it holds whatever it is in suspension so that the next time it goes through the filter can filter it out. We don't have any non-detergent oils anymore. Everything is a detergent oil. But the idea that you're going to use a detergent oil and clean up the inside of your engine is just craziness. It's not going to happen. So there's no scrubbing bubbles when it comes to detergent. And how does Mark know this? Well, Mark went to school with Valvoline, and Mark has a business card that says that he's the Western District trainer. And so I got to go to their laboratory. I got to spend 3, 4, 5 days there. They taught me how to make a quart of oil. And then when we tested it, it failed miserably because of 2 drops of product that I didn't put in. So it called for 27 whatevers, and I only put 25 in. And it's just because I was in a hurry and I just didn't measure right. So it's really important. Now, can you put in, can you put Valvoline and then fill, add a quart of Chevron? Yes, you can. There's no harm, no foul, as long as they're the same. But even if they aren't the same, if you're just going to go another 100 miles and they don't have a 0.20 synthetic and you need to go another 100 miles, and then put a quart of 30 weight in, nobody cares. Your engine's not going to care. Nobody's going to care. So in the short run, it's not going to hurt you to mix oils in case you, you know, you have a quart of 20-50 in your trunk and you're really 0.20. Another thing is many of the new oils have the consistency of water for fuel economy. And I want you to do this. Put your hands together like you're praying and rub your hands together as hard as you can, as fast as you can. That's your motor. So when I want to lubricate those two pieces of metal rubbing on one another, do I want to use water or peanut butter? And that's why we have oils, the consistency of water now, is because it does a much better job. My email is mark@marksalem.com. You're welcome to email me a car question. If you leave me your phone number, I probably will call you back from my block cell phone, and I'll probably need more information. So mark@marksalem.com, and obviously my website is marksalem.com. You're welcome to stop by there. There's lots of automotive. Drive safely, wear your seatbelt.